Jonathan Blevins is the e-commerce manager at Equipment Share, a B2B company in the construction industry. I've discussed with Jonathan about Equipment Share's omnichannel strategy and the challenges of purchasing behavior for high-ticket items. He discusses their content creation efforts and the value-added services they provide. Jonathan also shares insights on organic marketing, short-form videos, and influencer marketing, and talks about the balance between customer acquisition and retention and the challenges in the current customer acquisition landscape. Additionally, he discusses the impact of cookieless world on paid media and the importance of analyzing channel performance and ROI. In the conversation, Jonathan discusses various aspects of marketing, analytics, and e-commerce and emphasizes the importance of paid search KPIs and the different metrics he focuses on at different stages of the marketing funnel. Jonathan also shares how he has been surprised by the results of his email marketing strategy and the importance of customer focus. He discusses the use of analytics platforms and the need to trust the data while also being aware of potential biases. We've also discussed the role of AI in SEO and content generation, as well as the challenges of multi-channel marketing and attribution. Jonathan also touches the importance of AI on traditional media and shares his passion for e-commerce and his involvement in Cat Rescue. This episode is packed with marketing wisdom, insights, and valuable tips for anyone in the e-commerce industry. So let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Hey, Jonathan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. Really looking forward for this episode. Plenty of things to unpack. A lot of companies are struggling with acquisition, struggling with marketing. Try to identify the right channels, and I think we have an expert here in the room. So really, thank you for your time. So Jonathan, maybe we can start with just an introduction of yourself. Please share with us your expertise and what you do in the industry, and you can start whenever you want.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. I've been working in e-commerce for just over 15 years now. I kind of got my start by accident. I originally went to school for computer science and decided that I really didn't like writing code for hours on end, and I was really bad at it. But knowing a little bit about how code works feeds really well into the e-commerce space. The two often go hand in hand, so that worked out well for me. But I originally got my start working in comparison shopping engines back when they were still a thing. And then from there, I was fortunate enough to get to kind of bounce around between a lot of different channels. And from that experience, stepped into the e-commerce analytics manager for the team that I was working with at the time. And then from there, kind of moved around a little bit until I settled at Equipment Share as the e-commerce manager.
Nice. So what's, you're really passionate about the marketing side. Obviously, data is an important component and analytics. Why do you think you are so excited about this specific obviously industry, but specific position or role that you take?
Yeah, I mean, data is kind of key with everything we do. And I love that. I love that. I've been in so many meetings where people sit down to kind of just subjectively talk about what one person thinks is right, what another person thinks is right. And I think it's really hard to kind of come to a consensus if people don't see eye to eye, but data is the great equalizer, right? Like there's no arguing with numbers. They just are what they are. I've loved e-commerce ever since I jumped into it. I like to joke that it's a way to study people without having to interact with people. I think everybody in e-commerce knows users tend to be historically bad about telling you about their shopping behaviors, but looking at the data behind what they do is really insightful and can kind of give you a lot of really good takeaways as far as how they interact and behave. And that's all fascinating to me.
Nice, nice. Interesting. Maybe a few words about Equipment Share.
Sure. Equipment Share is a, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of us. We were on Forbes top startups for a long time now, which we're growing out of. But we started off as kind of an equipment rental company, and then kind of branched out from there into T3 and a few other things. So T3 is the OS for construction. The goal is to basically just be an all-in-one platform where you can manage an entire construction business. It's everything from people to materials to assets. For me specifically, I work more on the part side of the business. So the Equipment Share shop is the kind of our little domain.
Interesting. So it's primarily a B2B business, right?
Yes, it is. It's weird how it behaves. It is B2B, but we have like B2B and then like super B2B customers, if that makes sense. So we treat the smaller B2B customers a lot more like a traditional B2C business. But yeah, you're right. It's a lot of like businesses that need like heavy equipment parts for their fleet and stuff like that.
I mean, some of those parts or equipments, these are like really expensive type of gears, right? So it's high ticket, I mean, volumes, right? And how you were able to create, you know, purchasing behavior to support that.
It's kind of wild. Yeah, we have products that range anywhere from, you know, like $10, $15 to a couple thousand for like a new engine or something like that.
Wow.
Tracking average order values, you can imagine, is kind of all over the place with us, depending on what happens. And things can get pretty swingy. But yeah, it's mostly just trying to do a good job with demand forecasting as far as what parts people need for the machines in the fleet and service those people.
Yes. So it's traditionally kicked off the company as a digital only, or it's also, you know, more, did some business also offline, or is it kind of an omnichannel strategy?
Yeah, it's definitely an omnichannel strategy, and equipment share at large is involved in pretty much anything you can think of. But a lot of what we do is either through a website or over the phone.
Okay. And the website was launched when?
It's been live for about 2.5 years now.
2.5 years, right. And the main driver for launching the platform was what? I mean, providing better service, so increasing sales, reduced cost. What were the drivers for this move?
All of the above. I think that the construction industry in particular needs to be pulled a little into the modern age. There's that old adage, if it's not broke, don't fix it. They really take that to heart. So there wasn't really anybody doing what we're trying to do in the space. And so like everything from ease of use for site UX experience to just providing a better overall experience for customers was kind of the goal.
Yeah. So how do you do that? I mean, how do you aggregate feedback? How do you engage with customers, with buyers? How do you work with data? What's happening?
Yeah, it's a big question. There's a lot that goes into it. I guess one of the things that's most interesting for us is trying to figure out, like, obviously demand forecasting, every business has the rounds with figuring out like who their audience is and what parts they need and stuff like that. We're fortunate enough to have a list of basically parts that tend to be replaced on machines. We call them wearables. So stuff that you would expect to kind of just diminish over time with wear and tear. Yeah. But we don't have a traditional, like, if you like this, you bought this, because it's a very needs-based environment, if that makes sense. So it's not like if you go online to buy a sweater, I could serve you another sweater, because if you bought the first one, you're really likely to buy the second one.
Yeah.
For us, it's people that just, they have their machines, they need to keep them running at optimal efficiency. And then if something breaks, they reach out to us to find the part for it, replace and fix it.
Yeah. So they go to the website, they know what they need to, and they find a part and they purchase it, right?
We're trying to be a little bit more inventive there too. I think historically the industry is relying on people that know exactly what part they're looking for, and it doesn't do a great job of helping people that don't know specifically what part they're looking for find what they need. So we're trying to help solve that a little bit too, but there's a lot that goes into it. Everything from like serial breaks on heavy construction equipment, for instance. There are some machines that are the exact same make and model that need different parts because they have a different engine in them, for example. So it's pretty tough to kind of aggregate all that data and make it friendly and usable to a customer.
Yeah. And some of these transactions are part of some kind of a warranty plan or an SLA plan or a subscription plan, or is it just like one-off when something's faulty, we need to fix?
Yeah, most of them are one-off. Typically, when you deal with like warranty versus like aftermarket parts, for instance, it's whether or not the machine's over the warranty is 9 out of 10 times the big concern. Because if most machines, if they are under warranty, they have to have an OEM part in the machine itself. But yeah, there's a lot of people out there that just, they have their machine, they've had it since, you know, the early 90s or whatever the case may be. Still runs great, works fine. They just, you know, need a new filter or whatever the case may be. So.
Yeah, I know. How do you work on the supply chain side? I mean, inventory, warehouses, is it like on demand or everything is like planned there? Like, can share more on this?
So, I mean, I don't have a whole lot to do with that. For
Yeah.
my part, I'm most interested in just moving what we have, demand forecasting, kind of false, and yeah, so.
Okay. So what are the primary areas that you're focusing on?
So I think right now we're reaching out to a lot of kind of smaller businesses, people that typically have fleets in the range of 1 to 5 machines. And that's kind of our main focus. There's not really a good space for people like that in our industry to be able to like get support on finding the right parts for the machines, making sure their machines are in good shape, maintenance, stuff like that. One of our big initiatives right now is just our knowledge base. We've built a content hub with just everything that we think would be helpful for people that, you know, own a small fleet. So, we have a couple of different sections to it, but anything from like deep dives on how parts work to figuring out like what machine you might need for a job or something like that. But yeah, I don't think that that industry is, it's not very forthcoming with the information that's there, and that's something that we're trying to change.
Yes, and that content hub is the primary idea is to provide value, to provide knowledge, better service, and to remember you guys when they need to purchase something, right?
We hope so. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's, we actually have one marketing channel, our email channel, that's entirely focused on just bringing value to the customer. That's all it does. There's no traditional sales or anything like that that happens through that channel for the most part. It's just about providing value to our customers. It's something that we believe very strongly in. I believe very strongly in it. And yeah, I think it's been good. I think people respond well to that in the trailer,
Nice,
just
nice.
conversely
And
with us.
how you come up with ideas and how you create this type of content?
It's quite the ordeal, but our strategy is mostly focused on keyword research. So we'll look at keywords that are relevant to the products that we're selling in the industry that we're selling it in. Do a potential traffic analysis, which is basically just looking at, okay, of all the traffic that these keywords drive, what percent of that traffic do we think we can acquire? And then our content strategy kind of follows from there. So we initially started by just producing content on high-ranking keywords that we wanted to go after because we knew the traffic would be valuable to us. And then after we wrote about the pieces of content, it kind of started to take shape into what it is now, which is our four content pillars on our site. So it definitely started as very much a acquisition-based, targeted, specific focus for keywords. And then from there, as you know, both my team learned more about the industry in general, and as we kind of got further and further down the list, we kind of just started breaking it out into niche topics. So we'll talk about everything from how often you should replace an air filter to electric machines and the rise of those in the fleet. So yeah.
And this is the type of content is like text-based, video-based, or what type of all of the above?
So right now it's mostly text-based through our content
Okay.
hub. We're working on kind of being more aggressive in the video space as well. Right now we mostly produce shorts. I think YouTube shorts are a really great way to introduce people to brands. And I'm seeing a lot of research that says that the majority of people, when they are introduced to a brand, like to have it in little bite-sized chunks. So YouTube shorts,
Yes.
for instance, their kind of 60-second content clip has been real good for kind of getting word out for us. And I imagine other
Nice.
brands too.
It's the we are all in the TikTokification, survivors, I would say, right? People stop reading and they're looking for this short form bite size. So well done on the video side. So obviously, and you push this to TikTok, Instagram, like Facebook, right?
Everywhere we can, pretty much, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It's the dream is to hopefully produce individual content catered for each specific platform, but I think for brands with fewer resources or smaller brands, it's fairly easy to get by with minor adjustments to each individual content piece for different platforms. Yeah.
Interesting. What else on the organic side that you're doing?
Oh, so much. I think a lot of like we have a lot of SEO eval that goes into our site itself. We care a lot about entity mapping for Google and just painting a better picture of like our overall site hierarchy structure so that it's more understandable. Far and away, most people that come to our site, they'll find us actually start deeper on our site because we rank pretty well for the terms that they're looking for. I've done everything from like technical SEO eval on the site to content SEO on the site itself, and that's a huge part of our strategy as well. And then everything down to kind of the nuts and bolts of it to from like backlinking, for instance. So
Interesting. So you mentioned email marketing, you mentioned SEO. right, work. I mean, content creation, text-based, mostly, you know, short-form videos. It's really impressive. I mean, well done for an industry which is considered traditional, right? But I don't think there is any traditional industry anymore, right? Everything is disrupted these days, right? And there are people,
oh, yeah, I totally agree
there are
you.
People everywhere, right? People are buying. Who is your typical persona? I mean, is it like the owner? There is an official procurement position. What is the typical persona for you guys?
We have a couple of different personas, but I think the demographic I'm most interested in talking to is probably the small business owner that mm-hmm. he either is pretty handy himself or he knows a guy. Everybody knows a guy, right? that yeah. can help yeah. him out with work and stuff like that. So that's the person that right now I'm really focused on reaching, because I think there's a lot of people out there mm-hmm. that are in that situation and they're a little underserved.
Interesting. How do you think you're balancing the efforts between, you know, putting more efforts and acquiring new customers versus retentions and upselling with existing customers?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, we're still relatively new in our explosive growth phase. So most of what we do is acquisition focused, but that's mm-hmm. not to say we don't have a retention program. We certainly do. Right yeah. now, most of our effort though goes towards acquisition. And I think most brands, when they're in that explosive growth phase, the idea is to gobble up as much traffic as you can get your hands on. And then once things start to level out, that's when we focus on like audience refinement and stuff like that to try to do more with the people that you capture. Yeah.
By the way, I hear from all my guests, and whether they're brands or retailers or whatever, that acquisition has become really, really tough, right? Do you feel that as well? I mean, what is your perspective for the last few years? What is happening in the acquisition side?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, everything from the death of third-party cookies to just the way that the paid search landscape is changing has been huge. Paid social is kind of also changing as well. It's mm-hmm. it's become a little bit more, I think as like these barometers and signals kind of go away, it's going to be a lot more nebulous, and we're going to be a lot more reliant on different platforms to kind of feed that information to us, which I'm not really a fan of. I like digging into the data myself and really getting in the weeds, but that just kind of seems to be the way the industry is going. But what I'm seeing is a lot more pivoting towards like influence marketers and affiliate programs and stuff like that. Word of mouth has always been one of the most reliable ways for marketing, which is why people chase endorsements and things like that. So we're seeing that shift out right now, I think, from like a typical distribution of like paid search affiliates and organic to moving more away from like paid search, paid social, and display marketing kind of towards the more affiliate side of things.
Got it. So, and you mentioned also influencer marketing. Are you considering this as well?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Good.
Wow. It's not super exciting in our space unless you really like construction equipment. But yeah, there are influencers out there that make some interesting content. So
interesting. And you mentioned the cookie-less world, right? So and what are you guys doing on the paid media side?
Well, I think most of it's being handled by the platforms agnostically, right? So there's not really a lot to do. For me, most of my concerns revolve around our Google Analytics implementation. We had a lot of like server-side tracking set up and stuff like that. And so seeing how all of these changes are going to affect how we collect data, I've just been kind of nervously watching that. So far, there's nothing really super alarming about it, but there are a lot of aggressive like ad blockers out there, for instance, in blocking all this traffic and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And I think that we're definitely kind of in the overcompensation phase forward, where people are super careful about their privacy, it feels like to me. And they're, you know, really nervous about having their data like syndicated in ways that they don't like.
Sure.
But I think I speak for most brands out there when I say we're only interested in marketing to you if you want to buy our product. And if you don't want to buy it, then we aren't keen to, you know, spend a lot of money on you. So I'm hoping that there will be kind of a balance that we wind up that with, you know, enough to target people to reach the audience that wants to see us and want to reach out to you, and not having to cast as wide of a net. So.
Yeah. And how do you analyze channels' performance and, you know, ROI or ROAS on various channels? I mean, do you care which channel works better and just putting more resources on the best channels, or just spreading out as a strategy? Well, what's
Oh
your
yeah.
strategy?
Oh, I care way too much. I like to look at everything, but I think that's
Okay.
an unrealistic expectation for people. I just love numbers, but so for our like our retention marketing, we care more about engagement rates. So we're looking at things like CTR, overall list sizes, stuff like that. So a good engagement rate for emails, we care a lot about open rates because email has shifted away from like spam and complaint are still important parameters, but now engagement is, more than anything else. So we try to stay at around 60% for our open rates, for instance, and try to make sure that our click-through rate floats around 40% or higher, just to make sure that we're faced up blacklist opportunities,
Wow,
which is
that's
something like
impressive.
that. Well, thank you. But yeah, a lot of it now in that space is it's a lot of segmented marketing. So we're seeing that kind of shift from back when I first started doing email marketing, you just blast your entire mailing list and call it good. But now it's breaking down your audience so that you're hopefully serving them content they're actually interested in seeing. Paid search, it depends on where in the funnel that we're targeting with paid search. So a lot of our top of funnel campaigns, for instance, I care a lot about impressions. I think it's a valuable metric to kind of get a read on how many people you're reaching. But I don't care nearly as much about impressions as I do engagement for top of funnel. So I'm looking at clicks and click-through rate on the individual ads themselves. And then everything in the middle kind of just spirals from there. So retention also has a big focus for us in lifetime value for customers. So we pay a lot of attention to if LTV is going up for our customer base and hopefully getting them to obviously purchase more times now that they're kind of in our retention flow.
So you said you're a numbers guy. You calculate everything, you measure everything, you analyze everything. Are you sometimes surprised by the results?
All the time, all the time, all the time.
Really?
There's, oh yeah. So when we first set out to do our email marketing strategy, we got a huge surprise as far as what we thought our customer base wanted. We learned a while back that one of the most important things was for us to just be present for customers. I think that matters almost as much as the offer that we're presenting to the customers, just to remind them that, hey, we're here, we provide a great service. We probably got what you need, stuff like that. But email completely changed in that regard. Specifically for us, we went from kind of being more aggressive with marketing to just focusing more on customer value and things like that. And it's been really good. We've had a really positive response and feedback
Yeah,
from
for moving
retention.
for providing value, providing content, some valuable content, right? Rather than trying to upsell and sell something. And obviously personalized, trying to segment audiences and provide more targeted content, right?
Yeah, it's difficult to do in our space. We're pretty fortunate though because a lot of our industry looks the same. So a lot of the content that we produce is interesting to everybody, but we try to touch on everybody that has kind of a hand in our industry, everybody from like the fleet manager who is, they're running the business, they've got their, one to five machines, or in the case maybe to the service tech that, is working in the field and just wants to know more about the machines he works on. But yeah, it can be a very technical space for sure, which is always fun to kind of dig into.
Are you deploying any specific analytics platform to give you just a larger overview of the specific channels, or you're just trusting the specific channels data and try to compile something
I don't
on
think
your side?
anybody should trust any metrics they get out of a platform. I think that's
Wow,
rule number
it's a
one,
strong
right?
statement.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to die on this hill. I think that it's in platform's best interest to obviously attribute as many orders as they can to themselves. And you kind of need a great equalizer, if you will, that kind of determines, okay, what actually happened. Google Analytics is great for that. It's something that I've been using since I started in this space way back when. GA4 has been interesting, to say the least, migrating to GA4 from Universal Analytics. UA was very familiar, worked very well. So GA4 has been a little bit trickier, but yeah, I think you definitely have to have like the top level view, whether it's Google Analytics or Adobe Analytics or whatever your choice of analytics platform is, to kind of just equalize everything about.
No, it's interesting to hear that you trust the data and you have a way to implement quick changes to adapt for updates on data, right? Usually, and I hear this in a lot of cases, people are surprised with data, but they don't have the I would say the maybe company culture or internal processes to support change, right? So they're looking at it, but there's nothing that they can do. It's really company-wide change that needs to be implemented, and it's more a difficult way to process data, right? So just adapt quickly or make, you know, very quick changes, whether it's on the product SKUs or on market channels and various other aspects of the business. So really nice to see, I guess. Having the, any marketeer today obviously needs to know marketing, but needs to know analytics, technical implementation of platforms, and having a bird's eye view of what's happening, right?
Yeah, it's something, what you just said is something I think about all the time. I think you have to be reactive now, and I think that being reactive to changes in data matters more than anything else. So it is something you have to actually work at to promote that kind of culture. Yeah. And I find that giving people kind of limits on what they can do and just setting boundaries as opposed to just setting an actual structure is serving a lot better if you have a team that really knows what they're doing and knows their space well. And giving them that freedom that you talked about to make those changes on the fly and react to data is pivotal for optimizing.
Yeah. Great. So I know you've been dealing with, you've dealt with startups, also with the multi-million dollar companies. What are some of the characteristics, specifically on the marketing side, that are probably different and worth mentioning between the growth company or, you know, company that is looking to upsell further, more focused on retention? What are some of the qualification for the position, maybe some of the characteristics that are relevant for each stage of a company?
It's a good question. I think that they're both a lot of fun, I'll say. It's a lot of fun to like walk into an existing space and shake it up a little bit. It's also a lot of fun to be with a startup that's just booming and you have new traffic just exponentially increasing every month. And it's really exciting to watch.
Yeah.
I think that this probably won't come as a surprise, but I think the data of the analytics for your site will tell you where you are in the stage. And So it's pretty easy to see the curve that your company follows, and whether your trajectory is clicks or visits, sessions, and revenue. I think a lot of people probably use revenue to determine where they are in that curve. Will tell you whether or not you're still in your explosive growth phase. And after you kind of level off a little bit, then at that point, I think it makes more sense to take a step back and focus a lot more on retention. Characteristics for both of those things, respectively. When you're in your explosive growth phase, when you're seeing exponential increase month over month or even year over year, I think that's the time to be super aggressive with acquisition and focus a lot on just gobbling up as much traffic as you can get your hands on.
Yes.
Doing conservative forecasting just to take as aggressive a stance as possible while you have the opportunity to pull in all that traffic is super important. And then once you start to see like diminishing returns and your traffic levels off and revenue levels off, that's a really good time to take a step back and look at kind of refining your existing audience. And you talked earlier about personalization. After you hit that kind of flattening of the curve, it's a really good time to step back and really knuckle down on your personalization and really focus on kind of dividing your demographic and making sure that you're getting what you know, you've got in your sphere of influence.
Yes. Obviously, there is in a growth phase for an early startup, there is the product market fit stage, right? It doesn't, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't make sense to spend on paid media before you reach this milestone, right? When you see growth with a specific market, with a specific product definition, then it's worthwhile to invest and acquire faster, right?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think that you should be a little fast and loose with it, because I think that sometimes your audience can surprise you. And I think sometimes you can find opportunities where you normally wouldn't think that they exist. But we all know that segmentation is key in digital marketing, and understanding who you're going after is probably the most important thing as far as where you're going to spend your money.
Great, great. So Jonathan, you're getting the gold medal of the show because it's been half an hour and we didn't mention the word AI for 30 minutes. So well done. Woo! Super happy.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
But I think let's just try to focus with AI on what's working in marketing, okay, with AI.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's really nervous about AI disruption in general, right? And I think that they're right to be, for the most part. For us, the very first natural step we took with generative AI was right into the SEO world. A lot of people like to ask So ChatGPT is the one that I'm most familiar with. A lot of people like to ask it kind of these general SEO questions, and they get really general, vague, and helpful answers. But if you can
Yeah.
be specific, if you can really drill down on this is my target audience, these are the keywords I'm trying to get to, this is the type of content I want to produce, you can really get some great information out of generative AI as far as like SEO, whether it's ideas for content production to SEO evals for pages. I think it's really good in that space. Other spaces, not so much. In like partnership marketing, for instance, it's pretty easy for people to tell still like what is AI and what isn't, and whether or not that resonates with them. We don't use generative AI for content production at all. We actually still have writers that produce it. That's something I'm leery of because our industry is really sensitive to not only having correct information, but having experience based behind it. So, yeah, I think about that a lot and how it's changing. But right now, most of what I use for AI is to kind of just get creative juices flowing. So I'll be like, okay, I need to write an ad, and this is what I'm doing with it. And so I'll ask, ChatGPT, like, hey, write this ad for me. And I'll read it. And I'll be like, this is terrible, but I know exactly what I want to do, and I know exactly how I want to change it. And so that's been really great for me for like AI and other channels too. It gives me a really good jump point, I think, for
Nice.
launching off and other things. But yeah, for SEO, it is surprising how far it's come and how fast it got there.
Yeah, that's definitely an area for quick disruption. And I just read the latest announcement from Google. I mean, they are seems that they are okay to generate content from Bard, ChatGPT, whatever, but they want some kind of a human touch to be added to the basic, raw content that comes out of ChatGPT. So provide some kind of a new perspective or some kind of a new creative information. And they're perfectly, happy with that. So that's, I think, a very interesting feedback to hear from Google on that respect. And
Yeah, I know that a lot of marketers are buzzing about the generative scripts that Google is serving now for search results. What do you think about that? Do you like that it's kind of pulling all that information together for you, or would you rather just see SERPs?
I think it's okay. I think I really like it, but it's I mean it's requires probably a different type of expertise because the tool will give you a lot of information, a lot of text, but it's not enough. And I just heard that the amount of content that was generated since ChatGPT was launched, I don't know, more than 1 year from by now already, the amount of content that was created equals to the amount of content that was created since the beginning of the internet. Like in 1 year, we created content in the volume of probably 20 years altogether.
That's
This is why
crazy.
it's crazy. This is why I think outbound is not working anymore as people expect, because just the volume of emails and content that is right bombarded on anyone is like crazy. And I think, I mean, if you want to attract, again, as a tech company, you want to attract, CIO, brands, CMOs, whatever, they want to attract their users as well, and they're struggling as well. So it's an ongoing struggle. I think there's a really a lot of things that are going to change. More focus on inbound, on some creative ideas. Yeah, I mean, cookieless world. I mean, there are other opportunities, and I wanted to ask you about multi-channel. I mean, this is something that you are considering, like selling on other marketplaces. I mean, Amazon is even relevant for that, or because Amazon with retail media, I mean, things are evolving quite nicely on that side as well.
Yeah, I think that Amazon and eBay, the appeal there is that the audience is already acquired for you, right? You don't have to go out and catch those people yourself. So you just have to post your products. And that's a great space. I think that Amazon, depending on your specific infrastructure needs, can be really good for you, or it can be a little bit of a challenge to balance what you should and shouldn't give out to Amazon as far as like what you retain from your brand specifically. But I don't know of any e-commerce specialists that aren't interested in selling in as many channels as possible. So that's definitely something that we've always pursued, and like branching out to other different channels and even optimizing for marketplaces in general is just a whole different ballgame. So.
Yes, I mean, in this market conditions, I mean, a lot of brands are happy to share, their revenues. I mean, anyhow, you shot 20%, 30%, with Meta or whatever, so might as well share it with another channel, right? So it's probably the same. Just be where your customers are spending time, right? And I think that's, I think it creates a lot of more complexities to understand where the purchase where it originated or where it came from. I mean, yeah, we can see an Amazon purchase, but we don't know why that was triggered. That's an area of a lot of analysis and data to be analyzed in order to come up with the right analysis of future purchasing behaviors, I would say, because of omnichannel or multi-channel type approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And this doesn't help, like, on platforms like Amazon, eBay, most of the data is hidden from you, right? You can't see, like, what you're talking about. Like, okay, how did this person get to my listing? Mm-hmm. Why did they convert? Way back in the day when I first started, we were looking at maybe 2 to 3 different channels for everybody that converted on our site. And now that number averages anywhere from, like, 12 to 15 touches. So multi-channel attribution is so much more complicated now than it used to be. And it's so hard to kind of consolidate all that data. I'm curious where you fall with that, though. Are you like a linear attribution guy? Do you think that every channel that touched the customer should get credit for the sale? Or are you like a hard and fast, last touch gets the sale kind of guy? Or what do you think?
Well, I mean, it depends on the life cycle of the company, right? I think if you're still in an experimentation phase, I mean, you need to touch everything, right? And try to to get some results, see what's working. Because marketing is so complex because there are so many channels that you can use, right? And so this is, I mean, once you settle on probably your product and targeted audience and there is a fit, then probably I believe in focus and make the strong stronger. Definitely in this era, right, where it's more focused on profitability, let's call it growth with profitability, which is kind of a new add-on, probably for the last, I would say, 18 months, right, post-pandemic, and a lot of focus on growth, but also with a profitable growth. So the only way to do that is just analyze what's working, and it's back-end and front-end, SKUs reduction, market reduction, channels reduction, and just make the strong stronger and try to maximize profitability and growth. I think this is probably the main focus of anyone these days.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of brands focus on that, like just trying to, I think branching out became a lot more a lot more cautious than it used to be.
It's okay to take risky, bold steps, right? Sometimes, but you need to have a solid foundation. Like your cash cows needs to really work hard, right? And you need to be investing the right effort there, and a lot of focus on retentions, obviously. And trying to develop new channels. I think it's something which is not probably in the primary focus of marketeers these days. Definitely around that, and probably less tolerance for analyzing what's working. I mean, this analytics thing is really, really complex. I don't think there is a very good solution these days to understand how people are. Of course, we know that they purchase, but we don't know what's triggered them to purchase on that specific touch point. Very complex.
Ironically, third-party cookies could have potentially solved that, but now that they're going away, we're kind of just, exactly like you said, we're all just kind of like, oh, well, we'll see.
So creators are happy, influencers are happy, I guess, from cookie world, right?
They are. I know a lot of influencers that are very excited that they can speak more to the CPM space. So,
yeah. sure. Hey, but by the way, are you considering also big screens like CTV advertising?
Oh man, traditional media has always been a little foreign to me. I'm a very like a neurotic data guy. You're talking earlier about the conservative marketer. That's me to the letter. I'm much more comfortable with incremental growth than I am taking huge swings because I hate to lose. But I don't do a lot with traditional media. I think there's a good space for it, but I just feel like I think about it like I think about CPM marketing. It's cost per impression marketing kind of makes me a little bit nervous because I've had a lot of bad experiences with it. I think that there's, when I worked in outdoors, there was a balance to be had. There was what we call like the grand spectacle, which is just going out and doing something big to attract a lot of eyeballs. It was like marketing with the intent of trying to produce viral marketing. And then there was the careful, cautious, like data-driven side of it that was more incremental and had a steadier growth rate. I'm really bad at the big swing part of it, and I feel like that kind of person shouldn't be in the traditional media space. So I'm not really that type of people.
Nice. So we're not talking today about national TV, radio, newspaper. That's for a different episode, right?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. Sounds good. Great, Jonathan, anything you want to add?
Well, I don't think so. It's been great. I've loved e-commerce. I've loved it since I first got into it. It's so much fun to get on board with somebody that knows a lot about it too and just kind of jam out about it for a while. So I really
Nice.
appreciate you having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Great, great. Jonathan, what are you proud of in your career?
Oh man. There's been a lot of things that I've done that I didn't think that I could do that I would say that I'm probably the most proud of. Email marketing comes to mind because I'm just a horrible designer. So when I was doing email marketing layout, even something as simple as like layouts for emails were just, it was so foreign to me. And I knew what I wanted, but I just couldn't make it myself. And so I decided to kind of pivot how I thought about it instead of trying to approach it from like a purely creative perspective. I broke it down into the language I can understand, like what are some of the patterns, what are, like how does UX consistently apply across the board, find brands that I like, try to mimic the structure of what they do. And fortunately for me, it worked. And if I have a pretty good designer for creative assets, I can make some pretty good looking emails and stuff like that.
Wow.
So I'd say kind of
Nice.
overcoming that hill of not being a creative person, but working in a creative space is probably the thing I'm most proud of in my career.
Any lessons you can offer to new entrepreneurs or execs in the business?
Quite a few. Don't be afraid of if your bounce rate is 60% or higher, don't let that scare you. If your conversion rate's sitting somewhere around 2 to 3% and you're nervous about it, don't be. There's nothing wrong with that, especially if you're being super aggressive with your marketing channels. Get out there, get in the space, but most importantly, be genuine. If you find value in what you do and you produce things that you think are valuable as a person that's in your industry, I think that'll resonate with your audience. So I think that's pretty
Nice.
important.
Nice. So move fast, break things. Don't be afraid,
Break things, but record all the data. So after it's broken,
right?
you can figure out what you broke. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's important. We can always look back and check out what we broke, right? And needs to be
Exactly.
fixed. Yeah. Thanks for that. Good comment. Good comment. Jonathan, fun fact about you?
Oh my gosh, I don't really have. I'm kind of obsessed with e-commerce. I spend a lot of my time just trying to get better at it. I'm trying to. I feel like my math credit isn't where it should be, so I'm trying to learn more about like categorical statistical analysis and stuff like that. But I've been married for been with my wife for just over 15 years now. Her hobbies are kind of becoming my hobbies. So I guess my fun fact is the work I get to do with her, and she does a lot with animal rescue. Right now, we're helping like a lot of cats, and she's done a lot of like fostering and adopted a few cats that like don't have homes, come from abused
Really?
homes, and rehabilitating them. And that's been, and it's been very rewarding for her. It's been
So how
really
many
cool to
cats
see
you have at home now?
it.
Are you counting them, or is it
Oh my
above
gosh.
10, below 10, or
Is it above 10?
really?
No,
Wow.
thankfully. I think
Wow,
that's
okay.
too many. There's just not enough hours in the day. So I think the most we've ever had, including the fosters that we've had in the house at one time, was seven. So it's
Really?
lower than that now, thankfully. So
Wow. Really
yeah.
impressed. Really impressed. Cats are, not everyone is comfortable with cats, so well done.
They definitely scratch that analytic part of my brain. I think cats are
Yeah.
puzzles that if you put enough time into them, you can eventually figure them out. So
Yes. And they have nine souls, so you need that, right? In e-commerce.
exactly.
Great,
Exactly.
Jonathan. Really enjoy our talk. Thank you so much. Always great to see, people are so excited about the industry and so passionate about it. So keep going. Wish you all the best. Good luck, and hope to see you soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimy, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimy.net to learn more. It's Vimy, VIMMI.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.